This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yiswu Heben. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
More than 14 million people in Angola and Democratic Republic of Congo are to be vaccinated against yellow fever to prevent the national and international spread of the disease. The World Health Organization is coordinating the emergency vaccination campaign, calling it one of the largest ever attempted in Africa.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from WHO headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, assaults and rapes by South Sudanese soldiers in Juba last month are condemned by the U.S., and the opposition in Zambia alleges the presidential election was rigged.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the U.S. says it is outraged by reports of assaults and rapes by South Sudanese soldiers in Juba last month. The July 7th attacks on civilians included assaults on humanitarian workers and journalists. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, says attacks on brave individuals attempting to help the people of South Sudan are attacks against humanity itself. Her comments center on violence at the NGO-operated Terrain compound in the capital. She says the U.S. Embassy responded to distress calls from the compound and urgently contacted government officials who sent forces to stop the attack. Ambassador Power says the U.S. is deeply concerned that U.N. peacekeepers were apparently either incapable or unwilling to respond to calls for help. The U.S. has requested an investigation and has demanded swift action if the allegations prove to be correct. But Power also criticized the South Sudan government. She says throughout the three-year conflict that began in December 2013, the government of South Sudan has routinely allowed impunity for murder and sexual violence. December 2013 is when fighting erupted between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and then First Vice President Riek Machar.
Meanwhile, the number of South Sudanese refugees fleeing to Uganda continues to grow. The UN Refugee Agency says since December 2013, hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese have traveled to neighboring countries, especially Uganda. But after new fighting and violence broke out around Juba on July 7th, more people started to leave. Nora Strum is a spokesperson for the UNHCR from Geneva. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapowa about the Sudanese refugees.
So since the most recent outbreak of violence, close to 85,000 South Sudanese have fled their country in search of safety. Most of them have gone to Uganda, but a lot of them have also ended up in Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Kenya.
So what's happening once they cross the border? Where does the UNHCR come in?
So in these different countries of asylum, I would especially focus on Uganda, given that the large majority of this recent influx have fled to that country. We receive the refugees upon arrival at the border. There's two main border points into which they're crossing, and we call these collection points or transit centers. And then from there, they're brought to a number of different, more developed refugee camps or settlements, where we provide them with food, water, immediate health care and assistance of that nature.
Can you tell us about their condition?
Sure. I mean, a lot of them report having spent days and days traveling in the bush without any food in order to hide from armed groups before they cross the border to Uganda. Some of them report being harassed along the road on their quest to find safety. So they come in very precarious conditions.
Now, the fighting around Juba, as you mentioned, happened in early July. Are you seeing a continuous flow still from South Sudan into Uganda?
We are. I mean, some of the numbers have decreased. There was really a peak right after the fighting first broke out in early July. But now the average is around 2,000 people crossing the border into Uganda. There has been a change in the sort of the movement. Some of them were initially crossing through the Elugu border point. They were mostly coming from Juba and eastern Equatoria. And now the majority of arrivals are actually coming in through Oraba, which indicates that they're coming from central Equatoria. The violence and sort of the unrest is shifting locations in the country.
Now, we had heard that there were many children who were traveling without parents. Do you have any information on them?
Yeah, so both in Uganda and Kenya, that's a real problem. And around 90% of the arrivals are women or children. And in Kenya in particular, we're seeing sort of an increase in the number of new arrivals under 5 years old who have severe malnutrition. So that's a real problem that we're facing in Kenya in particular. And we're trying to find ways to combat that.
Do you have figures on just how many South Sudanese refugees there are now in neighboring countries?
So in total, as of the 8th of August, there's over 900,000 South Sudanese refugees. The majority of those date from after the December 13th outbreak of violence, but a large number, over 85,000, have arrived in Uganda and Sudan in particular since the July violence of this year.
So once UNHCR manages to get these refugees to the camps, are there any particular challenges that they face?
Yeah, so in Uganda, some of the refugee camps are completely overstretched and are actually sheltering five times their capacity. And that's creating a huge burden on already overstretched resources and services. So there's problems with supply of water, supply of adequate shelter. And the problem is that we're just simply critically underfunded and we're not able to provide long-term assistance that we need to give to these refugees. So we're providing, you know, critical life-saving assistance, but longer-term gaps in terms of shelter, education, hospitals really need to be developed, and we don't have the funding for that right now.
Do you have any figures on how underfunded you might be?
Yeah, so the South Sudanese situation, which is what we're calling basically providing assistance to refugees in South Sudan, but also the main six countries of asylum, we're requesting over $608 million. And to date, we've only received $122 million, which means that we are 80% underfunded, which is a huge, huge gap. And the result of that is that the people who are already in such vulnerable conditions are going to be exposed to greater and greater risk and won't be able to overcome the trauma of forced displacement that they've suffered.
Nora Sturm is a spokesperson for the UNHCR from Geneva. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
More than 14 million people in Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo are to be vaccinated against yellow fever to prevent the national and international spread of the disease. The World Health Organization is coordinating the emergency vaccination campaign, calling it one of the largest ever attempted in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Mass vaccination campaigns usually take between 3 to 6 months to plan, but the World Health Organization says this campaign must begin by the start of the rainy season in September because the spread of yellow fever could become unstoppable. Yellow fever is a potentially deadly flu-like disease spread by mosquitoes. It causes a high fever and jaundice, a yellowing of the skin and eyes. The disease is not curable, but it can be prevented with the yellow fever vaccine. Since the outbreak of the disease in December, the WHO's latest estimates put the number of dead at 369 in Angola and 16 in the DRC, with nearly 6,000 suspected and confirmed cases in both countries. Yellow fever usually occurs in remote rural areas where people are routinely vaccinated against the disease. The WHO says the current deadly outbreak is particularly worrisome because for the first time it is occurring in densely populated urban areas where immunity is very low and the risk of its spreading is high. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich tells VOA the risk of international spread also is of concern.
There is an increasing urbanization, increasing mobility. There are environmental changes that make that international spread of mosquito-borne diseases. But we think that the outbreak is manageable if we can protect enough of people with the vaccine. So the goal is that we prevent this event to become a public health emergency of international concern.
The mass vaccination campaign will take place in Kinshasa and along the DRC's border with Angola. Jazarevich describes the scope of this campaign as unprecedented.
There are 17.3 million syringes that have to be shipped or air freighted to the Democratic Republic of Congo. 41,000 health workers and volunteers have been mobilized with more than 500 vehicles to operate between more than 8,000 vaccination sites in Kinshasa and along the border.
The WHO says an emergency committee will reconvene in the coming weeks to evaluate the situation and determine whether the yellow fever epidemic has been contained or constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The U.S. is outraged by reports of assault and rapes by South Sudanese soldiers in Juba. And millions are to be vaccinated against yellow fever in Angola and DRC to prevent the disease from spreading. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Well, relief efforts for an estimated 3 million displaced Nigerians are hampered as the government continues to battle Boko Haram rebels. The UN World Food Programme is transporting large amounts of rice and other cereals by helicopter to isolated communities in Borno and Yobe states. WFP country representative Abdou Dieng says the number of people who may have died from malnutrition is not known. From Dakar, he spoke with VOA's David Arnold about relief efforts in northeast Nigeria.
We are accessing to what we call liberated area. And what we found in this area is high level of malnutrition, particularly among children, and high level of food insecurity, touching about 3 million people so far.
Since you began this operation in the northeast of Nigeria, how many children and adults have actually died of malnutrition?
Very difficult to have those numbers. What I can tell you that people die because of malnutrition. People die because of lack of food or water.
Is the greatest part of the problem concentrated in one or two areas?
They are concentrated in two states, Borno and Yobe. More generally, many people also have fled into neighboring countries like Chad, Cameroon, and Niger, where also people who came from that area are really suffering. Now that we start providing the assistance into the country, there is less movement cross-border from Nigeria into the neighboring country.
Do you now have full access to both of those states in order to deliver food?
We have great access, but not full access. There are still parts of those areas where we can't have access because of military activities going on. But there are still areas that we can't access.
How do you gain access? Are you using helicopters or trucks?
We're using helicopter to access to most part of the area because road movement is still a bit complicated. Remember 2 weeks ago, there was an attack on a humanitarian convoy. There are still few roads that we could access with military escort.
What kind of food aid are you delivering?
In those areas, we're delivering part is food, but there are many areas close to the main cities where the assistant is providing cash to people and people use the cash to buy food. These are parts where still markets are functioning.
How about in Maiduguri and Bama and places near Maiduguri?
Places near Maiduguri and places near Damaturu, Maiduguri being the head of the state of Borno and Damaturu, the state of Yobe, in the vicinity of the cities which are liberated by the army, there are some market functioning where people, if they have access to cash, they can buy their food. But in area like Banki, where everything is destroyed, we providing food instead of cash. There are still areas where, like Bama and Banki, where really there is no market functioning. The only possibility for them to survive is the food that we are providing to them.
What kind of food are you sending?
So it's cereals in general, whether rice or sorghum, lentils. There are veg oil. And for children, we're giving them very specialized food, which we call plenty stuff.
Do you have enough funding to support all of the needs?
I may say that up to now, the donors are responding, but not to the level of the needs that we put on the table. And the needs that we first indicated to the donors was based on the population that we could access. But the more we go into it, the needs are increasing, and we have to revise our figures and ask for additional money. Not only food, the whole humanitarian sectors are involved. They need food, they need water, they need feed for some area where they could live. So the needs are very big. And in the next coming days, we will sit with the donors and revise the number and ask for help.
That was WFP Country Representative Abdul Dieng in Dakar. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold.
Zambia's incumbent president may have narrowly won last week's national poll, but the opposition has made allegations of rigging. Violence marred the campaign, and now police say they have arrested more than 150 opposition protesters. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg that onlookers say it isn't too late for the country to put itself together.
Zambia is proud of its peaceful history. Since it became a multi-party democracy in 1991, it has seen a series of peaceful polls and transitions of power. Now that proud history is being tested, as the nation's opposition alleges last week's poll was rigged, and police say they have arrested more than 150 rowdy opposition supporters who ran amok and vandalized property belonging to ruling party supporters. The opposition plans to challenge the count that gave President Edgar Lungu a narrow margin of victory. Analyst Mpomo Tsamai of the Pretoria-based Institute of Security Studies says onlookers should be more concerned about what happens next than what is happening now.
We should be worried about how the electoral petitions are going to be handled. Look, I think people are really worried about the violence that is taking place right now and the protests. You know, it's warranted worry. But the so-called instability in Zambia that is taking place is localized. It is not nationwide. So I don't see any potential regional spillovers.
She urged leaders to respect the legal processes that allow the results to be challenged in court. The opposition alleges the poll was rigged and the Electoral Commission colluded with the ruling Patriotic Front to give Lungu the win over challenger Hakainde Hichilema. The commission announced Monday that Lungu had won a margin of just 13,000 votes over the number he needed to avoid a runoff. Neither man's spokesman answered repeated calls seeking comment Tuesday. Vocal opposition supporter, former acting president Guy Scott, told VOA this is a key moment for Zambia. Scott is Lungu's predecessor, taking the helm shortly after the sudden death of President Michael Sata in 2014. Scott urged the international community to watch Zambia closely.
I would plead with the world to be a little bit patient, but also not absent-minded. I mean, trouble with news is all there's been in the capital in Zambia. Even if you give us 2 weeks, and we sort it out in 2 weeks, he's usually forgotten and gone on to some other African country that's having problems with its elections. And I would appeal to people to try and keep it in their memory that this is an issue and we want to see the system work.
The European Union Observer mission pronounced the August 11th poll as being largely peaceful and well-administered. The nonpartisan Christian Churches Monitoring Group says the results were credible and in line with its pre-vote estimates. Spokeswoman Chibesa Ngulube urged Zambians to stay calm.
We condemned any manner of violence in the strongest words possible, because at the end of the day, past the election day, I think Zambia must carry on. And whatever is happening today, tomorrow, will have repercussions in the future. So peace must be maintained at all costs, regardless of the side of the coin where you fall.
Sage words. But will angry Zambians listen? Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A surprising discovery has been made in the treatment of Alzheimer's. An anti-inflammatory drug used to treat menstrual pain has reversed memory symptoms in animals with the disease. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
The drug called mefenamic acid completely reversed memory loss in a mouse model of Alzheimer's disease. Mefenamic acid is a so-called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug used to treat menstrual cramps. In experiments with mice with Alzheimer's symptoms, the specially bred rodents predictably develop memory problems. 10 of the mice were treated for 1 month with mefenamic acid contained in tiny pumps implanted under their skin. 10 other mice had pumps of a placebo or inactive substance. The rodents were then placed in a maze to train them to get around the obstacles. In a Skype interview, researcher Mike Daniels says the treated mice learned the maze easily, but not the control mice.
We try to train the mice once they have Alzheimer's disease, and the Alzheimer's mice are untrainable. They cannot learn that maze.
In the treated mice, Daniel says the results were stunning.
What was just amazing is that this drug seemed to render the mice completely normal. It's something that we haven't really seen before, but there needs to be a lot more work done to really confirm whether this is real.
Daniel says brain imaging shows a lot of harmful inflammation in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. Researchers believe mefenamic acid targets an inflammatory pathway called NLRP3, reducing inflammation. Scientists found that no other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as ibuprofen, reduce the brain inflammation. Whether it works in patients at all stages of Alzheimer's, from people with mild cognitive impairment to those who are severely affected, is difficult to say, according to co-author Jack Rivers Audie.
Maybe if this was translated into the clinic, we would definitely want to put it into people at the early stages of the disease to try and slow the progress or stop the progress of the disease, rather than the ambitious aim of taking someone who's fully has Alzheimer's disease, has all the symptoms, incredible memory loss, and incredible cognitive impairment, and trying to reverse those symptoms. That might be very difficult.
The findings were published in the journal Nature Communications. David Brough of the University of Manchester oversaw the research. The researchers say the best news is the drug is already approved by regulators and known to be safe. So after further testing, mefenamic acid could reach the market to treat Alzheimer's relatively quickly. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali has an exclusive interview with Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, to discuss South Sudan, recent elections, and Boko Haram. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who is going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.